Welcome, true believers. And there's a key word why I say that, because we want to welcome you to the first episode of the new MCU podcast on the Phantom Podcast Network, which we are calling True Believers. And you know what? There's a reason we call it True Believers, because if you're a Marvelite, you're a true believer. And it's also a great tribute to, of course, the legendary Stan Lee, because if you are especially a child of the 80s and a Marvel fan, when you watch the old Marvel cartoons, every episode always welcomed with Stan Lee narrating and going, "Welcome, true believers." And speaking of true believers, I've got one here with me on this particular podcast. He is my co-founder, my co-host on Culture Clash, and just all around good guy. We're going to try to Marvel him up a little bit with this podcast. So I want to welcome Mr. Kevin Reitzel to the first episode of True Believers on the Phantom Podcast Network.
Thank you, Kyle. It is an honor to do this. Let's be honest here. First of all, not only is this our first episode of True Believers, an MCU podcast here on the Phantom Podcast Network, but we kind of threw this together last minute when we were discussing, WandaVision coming out here and the really cool universe that is ahead of us, including the Marvel Cinematic Universe and, of course, the streaming universe on Disney Plus. We figured we got to start doing a show just to honor Marvel. And you, Kyle, being the big Marvel guy and knowing the comics, I figured you'd be fine with that.
Yeah, no, I'm good with the MCU. I am of the opinion, Mr. Reitzel, that right now the Marvel Cinematic Universe is the biggest tentpole franchise in the film industry. It's not Star Wars. It's not Star Trek. With all due respect to those franchises, It is the granddaddy. It is the center pole holding up the big top right now in the film industry.
I can't really argue with that, because it set a precedent on how you build a universe with cohesive storytelling and character building and having everyone work together as a team in a span of over 10 years and even going further into the future. It is absolutely amazing what Marvel and Disney has done with this universe.
Yeah, it's something that's built, and we're getting started too, because it's kind of a significant time in the Marvel MCU, because we're hitting the first ever true MCU television shows. Yes, there have been Marvel shows. In fact, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started off being tied into the MCU, then it kind of went its own thing, own way. We kind of know what's going on. If you know your history, you know kind of the weird history of the Marvel television universe the last several years, which has produced some great things. S.H.I.E.L.D. had its ups and downs.
And of course, we had the Netflix series, of course, the, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Punisher, who else? What else am I missing?
Iron Fist, and of course, all coming together as the Defenders.
Jessica Jones, that's what I remember too. And then, of course, we had Agent Carter. That dropped on ABC first, right?
Yeah, that started on ABC. That was still when they were trying to incorporate S.H.I.E.L.D. into the MCU.
A lot of weird things happened in that thing. And I want to make it clear that we plan on covering eventually as much as we can. I know one of our things that we want to do is not only cover the new MCU universe that's streaming on Disney Plus, but we also want to go back and revisit the films that have built this MCU universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then go back and touch on all the other TV shows in one way or another.
Yeah. I think it's important too, Kevin, as we launch this, and yes, WandaVision coming out kind of inspired this. It's interesting when we think about it, because WandaVision was not supposed to be the first show on Disney Plus. It was supposed to be The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And then COVID happened. The way WandaVision was filmed, it got done a little bit different, quicker. And WandaVision still was supposed to be a little bit delayed, because it is going to tie directly into the events of Doctor Strange 2. And it's still...
But technically, it is launching Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, though, right?
Correct. Originally, it was supposed to be Black Widow, and obviously, COVID has changed so many things. And Kevin, I gotta say, I give Marvel a lot of credit. They could have held off on this for a couple months, just made Falcon Winter Soldier, they debut a Phase 4, or just held off until they put Black Widow out. But they made a very bold decision with this show. And we're going to talk about this when we review this show, because this show has had such an interesting reaction on the internet as well.
Oh, yes.
It is definitely a mixed bag. But let's, without further ado, you know, we've kind of set our statement of what we plan to do here. And again, the focus of this podcast is on the MCU. We will be doing some ties into comics and mentioning certain things, but this is about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, I have been reading Marvel comics since I can remember. My first thing I remember reading is an Amazing Spider-Man comic. So
yeah.
Marvel is home base for me.
Yeah, I've hit you up plenty of times like, Kyle, what's this? What's this mean? And the Cinematic Universe has become so special to me this last 2020 year of hell, COVID year. I watched the entire cinematic universe, starting with the chronological order, and then at the end of 2020, I watched it in the theatrical release order and it was an interesting experience doing both, and we'll eventually cover that as well. But yeah, man, I know how important this universe is to you, and I'm looking forward to discussing it.
Yep. So without further ado, let's get into our first episode and what our main topic is, and that is WandaVision. Now, again, we talked about it just a few minutes ago, Kevin, WandaVision being a very bold choice to start Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with the way things have fallen. But we are talking about two characters who more so in the Marvel comic universe have been key Avengers for a very, very long time. In fact, they, in the 80s, had one of the biggest Marvel miniseries. It was, I believe, a 12-issue miniseries, Vision and the Scarlet Witch, which led to them being married and actually the Scarlet Witch having children with the Vision, which turned into a very complicated story later on in a title called the West Coast Avengers, which was when the Avengers decided they were going to have an East Coast branch, regular Avengers, but they needed more coverage, so they created a branch out in California.
Death Row Records wasn't involved in that decision, was it?
No, not. I think it might have all been Captain America there. So gotcha. I'm just saying. But what was very interesting about that time for Vision and Scarlet Witch is they became one of the more popular couples in the Marvel Universe. And the Vision has always been kind of this interesting character to delve into. And what I want to just address real quick is there's a lot of not direct connections to stuff they did in that comic, because it was the 80s. They did some pretty crazy things there. But there's a family history with the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, and there's a lot of interesting dynamics that I'm curious to see as WandaVision plays out how far they go with this. So just so people have a little bit of background, if you really want to get kind of familiar with Vision and Scarlet Witch, if you're new to the MCU and you're kind of trying to figure out the comic book tie-in, Vision and Scarlet Witch miniseries, best place to find it is probably on the Marvel Unlimited app. If you subscribe to that,
right,
for you, it's worth it. And you can find that, read it. I'm sure it's going to probably get re-released into a trade paperback if it hasn't already.
An observation that I've learned over the last several days, and I just wanted to let people know that the backstory of these two characters was pretty much new to me. But it was obvious that in the cinematic universe that we've seen in the films, that the chemistry between these two characters, especially with the actors themselves, Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen, worked really, really well, to where they also wanted to explore the backstory and the future development of Wanda and her powers, but also making sure that these two had another avenue to show how their characters seem to really work and pay tribute to that original Marvel comic series.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's very fair to say. And I think the Scarlet Witch, Kevin, for those of the comic book readers, has a very interesting place in the MCU, because in the comics, the Scarlet Witch is a mutant. And we know what she could tie into coming down the line.
And specifically where Disney and Marvel want to take and introduce characters into the Avengers and future MCU program.
Exactly. So I just want this. I think this is a big one of the reasons why WandaVision could be a very big deal show. So, Kevin, with that, would you mind if I turned on the TV? I can only seem to get black and white reception. Yeah, black and white. Can you take us into WandaVision episode one?
Yes. Really excited about this, guys. So I just wanted to mention real quick is I needed some help with some Easter eggs here, because as soon as these episodes are released, and they made the bold decision two released the first two episodes together. And I think it was really, really smart. And I found this review on IMDb that kind of hit home, and the reason why they decided to do that. And the IMDb review said the decision to release two episodes in the first week was carefully calculated. If it's the only first episode, it might not make someone curious for the next episode. But with these two episodes, it really kind of starts to develop a little bit more. And as we talked about on social media, Kyle, this is kind of a slow burn. Clues are being laid out. It's not an in-your-face, they're going to be battling, you know, Hydra bad guys and stuff like this. And this is one of the very appealing things about this show. But I had to get a little help. I had to go online, and Screen Crush has these great about 13-minute, 15-minute episodes. And there's two out there right now talking about both of these episodes called Vision Episode 1, Every Easter Egg and What It All Means. And I needed some help, Kyle. I don't know if you saw any of these. Did you?
I've looked at them, but I haven't actually watched the videos yet. But I've looked at several articles that have a lot of Easter eggs. But Kevin, I'm going to ask you, tell me what you found in those Easter eggs.
The ties to the comics from what I've seen, and obviously, you know, what they're going to be teasing coming up with the character development of Wanda, and the big question of whether or not they're going to try to bring Vision back from dying in, you know, Avengers Infinity War. So, and I learned a lot about the characters of Vision and Wanda watching these things, because I had no knowledge of the backstory of the comics like you did. So for those of us that are in my boat, check out those Screen Crush videos on YouTube. They're very, very cool. So I thought, first of all, we would talk about, of course, WandaVision Episode 1. They don't have a name title. They just called it Episode 1. And what we get is Wanda and Vision, that they are struggling to conceal their powers during dinner in with Vision's boss and wife. But what's very interesting, Kyle, and as we've seen the trailers for this, they're stuck in television series land, so to speak, and they're paying tribute to the 1950s and 60s TV series. And in those videos, I learned that there's a very good possibility the reason why they took this direction is because with Wanda growing up in Sokovia, you know, in a third world country, that maybe she was watching these episodes, thinking that this is how life was for the perfect ideal American family. And in the first episode, they spoofed the I Love Lucy TV series. The woman and the man in the commercial are dressed like Lucy and Ricky. And then, in the second episode, you get more of a Dick Van Dyke show. The look and the feel of the episode are modeled after Dick Van Dyke and the theme song and all that kind of stuff. So regarding the first episode reactions and observations, what first came to your mind, Kyle?
Well, I went in being very curious about everything that was going on with this. So going into the first episode, I was very curious to see if they were going to dive right into the TV side of things, or if they were going to give us a little bit of setup. And to their credit, in my opinion, they did the right thing by just diving right into it as a TV episode.
Yeah.
I think that was a very wise decision. I think that this show needs to sell itself in a way, because it's a mystery. This show is a mystery show. Even though it's paying tribute to all this show is a mystery. And but what I loved about it was, one, the incredible acting right out of the gate, because Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen have to sell this, or this doesn't work at all.
Their chemistry is fantastic.
Not only is their chemistry fantastic, they're going completely 100% into this concept is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And we all know how great an actor Paul Bettany is. We've seen him in so many things. I mean, one of my favorite roles of his is still Geoffrey Chaucer in A Knight's Tale.
Oh yeah.
And also, but I've seen him. But
I'm a big fan of the rom-com Wimbledon.
Yeah.
With Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah. Also he's great in that. I loved him in Master and Commander. But we really haven't seen much of Elizabeth Olsen outside of the Scarlet Witch to this point. And she's phenomenal.
Yeah, she is.
She is absolutely phenomenal in this show. And they play up the camp aspect of these TV shows absolutely perfectly. But what I loved in the first episode was, and I know this also turned a lot of people off, so I'm going to be fair here, was the fact that the Easter eggs that were there were done in a way where some of them were completely obvious and some of them were so discreet, it's easy to miss.
Very subtle. Yep.
And I think unless you've gone and watched videos like Kevin have that point out every little thing, I think that it's one of these series that is definitely worth a rewatch after it happens, where you can kind of bold through it and really kind of like Game of Thrones, where you start going back and you see a lot of the connective tissue starting to come into place.
Yes. Excellent point. It's funny, going into it, I wasn't expecting to see these two battling bad guys in the MCU, you know, because the trailer kind of set the tone for it. So I was expecting this. I was just curious where the story was going to go and how, you know, Wanda or Vision for that matter were trying to figure out why they were there doing what they're doing. And one of the things I loved about this first episode and going into the second episode was the wonderful tribute and care that the creators took to recreating this 1950s I Love Lucy era type of television. Because even though I wasn't there or born for that matter when these first aired, they were on constant rerun rotation when I was growing up in the 70s and early 80s. So I'm very familiar with these shows that these characters are going to be stuck in living. So that was my first episode reaction observation, including what you mentioned, the wonderful chemistry and acting with these two characters and allowing them to step outside of their characters' Marvel Cinematic Universe style and the way that they work together. You get to see them be funny and quick back and forth. And it was just wonderful to watch these two step outside of their normal characters' box and comfort zones.
Yeah. Now, I was just going to say too, as far as the plot of the first episode, that's the thing. It's not a heavy plot. It is. Mm-mm. The first episode is probably going to be the lightest episode of this series. And I think it's meant that way to kind of take your guard down a little bit, but also keep your guard up, because you're like, what the heck is going on here? And I think it's some very interesting writing, but there's a couple of things, Kevin, I caught right away within the plot. One is, and this is the biggest question I think of the series that everybody's had since going in, what's the deal with the Vision? Is it the actual Vision, or is this something is this a version of the Vision that Wanda has created in this world? Right, because right. One of the first things she says is, your indestructible head.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of little ties and seeds that they've laid in this that I'm learning after rewatching and doing the search online here. But let me ask you, we've touched on a little bit, Kyle. Let's get into segment two here, the cast. Let's talk about the cast here of episode one. Of course, we've talked about Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda, Paul Bettany as Vision. But we get a couple of interesting characters here. And I want to highlight Catherine Hahn, who plays Agnes. We also get Fred, who plays Mr. Hart, and Fred Melamed, who plays Mr. Hart, and Deborah Jo Rupp, who plays Mrs. Hart. A lot of people know her as Mrs. Foreman on that 70s show. She also had a recurring character on Friends. And we had some couple of other characters, background characters. But I want to talk about Catherine Hahn real quick, Kyle, because I became a big fan of hers after she did a supporting role in Step Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember her role where she was stuck in that marriage of the other brother and she couldn't stand it. And she had the hots for one of the brothers in that, but she really kind of made her comedic chops in the Bad Mom movies. She was absolutely hilarious, but she's playing someone called Agnes, which in the Easter eggs and very astute fans like yourself of the comic series, she could be playing another famous character in the comics.
Yeah, she could possibly be Scarlet Witch mentor Agatha Harkness, who was one of the most powerful witches in the MCU. Now, this character has been killed off and brought back several times in the MCU, but she has always been kind of a key player when it evolved.
She survived the Salem witch trials, yes, is what I've heard.
Yes.
And the character of Agnes that Catherine Hahn plays had this brooch that matched something very simple. That was the the comic book character had.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. Correct. So it's going to be very interesting how this plays out. First of all, she's phenomenal in this because she has some one-liners in this are just great.
I am so glad they've brought Catherine Hahn to the MCU. And the cool thing about her character is that she plays a certain stereotype character that was very popular, that ran through 1950s, 60s, and even through the 70s and 80s as the kind of annoying, intrusive next-door neighbor. They were either sometimes good or sometimes bad. And there was a character on Bewitched. I forget the character's name, but she was always suspicious of the character of having some type of ability, you know, and they're always trying to snoop it out. But I thought she played that role to a T.
Yeah, no, she definitely does. I thought Melmed and Deborah Jo Rupp were also very good. But Kevin, I want to ask this as an observation with these particular characters. You get the feeling that these are actual real people who have been brought into this and they're kind of aware and they're kind of, there's that scene where Fred Melman's.
You mean aware, but being manipulated in the situation?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Well, like, it's like in the case of Mr. and Mrs. Hart, when Fred's kind of trying to get information out of them and you can tell he's kind of, it's more than just a boss trying to get to know his employee.
No, I get what you're right, and there is something to that. And one of the theories was that it was Wanda who actually initiated him choking because she was getting very uncomfortable.
Exactly.
And you know, the weird Deborah Jo Rupp Mrs. Hart scene where she's like laughing uncomfortably as he's dying and choking on his food. And then of course Vision upon Wanda's request goes in and saves his life. But that's a very good astute response. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. And again, the whole thing where Deborah's going, stop it, but laughing and stop it. And then Wanda instructs the Vision to save Mr. Hart. And that leads to my theory of the Vision being a creation of Wanda, because normally the Vision would have acted out on his own to save his life.
We should mention, and I learned watching the YouTube video, was that Wanda has a certain power, and her powers started to grow and get stronger. She started to develop and uncover them, but she has this ability to not necessarily resurrect something, but to change time and universe or something like that.
Kind of a warp of reality.
Okay. Gotcha. So the question is she working to... You know, we're not sure what time in the MCU this takes place.
We do know it is after Endgame.
It is after Endgame. Okay, I was not sure of that.
Yeah, it is. That? Marvel has confirmed, and Kevin Feige has confirmed, that this does play place after Endgame.
That makes it interesting because then that means that she's probably either missing Vision or maybe because of this that situation that's going on and she's reliving or trying to live in a world without Vision by bringing him back in, that maybe this is a way to bring Vision back into the MCU universe and resurrect him in some way or another. Cause personally, I would love that. What about you?
So here's the thing with this, the Scarlet Witch, even in the Marvel comics is definitely one of the most powerful characters in the MCU. She was actually responsible for two major events in the comics. One called the House of M, where she basically decided no more mutants, and 3/4 of the mutant population lost their powers.
Wow. Yeah. This is what I got watching those videos, is that she is probably one of the most powerful Avengers/superheroes in this universe.
But she's not exactly the most stable. And one of the theories is that she's actually created this reality as a coping mechanism
for herself. That makes sense. Yep.
But There's something that makes a twist into all of that at the very end of this episode, Kevin.
Okay.
And that is, if you watch right as the credits are starting, we pan back and we see the old classic TV is actually being monitored by somebody.
Right.
And the
Easter egg there.
The key observation is when they close the notebook and you see the symbol on the notebook, it is for a key organization in the Marvel Universe that we have not yet seen in the MCU. We think we might have seen in the MCU, and that is S.W.O.R.D. Now, S.W.O.R.D. in the Marvel comics is the organization that protects planet Earth from intergalactic threats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now,
like the cosmic threats.
Yeah, the cosmic threats. Yeah. Now, it was supposedly in part founded by Nick Fury in the comics. But the major character that was introduced as kind of the head of S.W.O.R.D. is a character by the name of Abigail Brand. And the first time we really see S.W.O.R.D. is in the X-Men universe. But Abigail Brand is a very popular character within the MCU. However, or within the Marvel Comics. However, in the MCU, the speculation is S.W.O.R.D. is what we saw at the end of Captain Marvel in the Stinger.
Ah, okay. Okay. I didn't catch that. I don't know if I catch that or not.
Because you know where Snake is on vacation and the Skrull, yes. His Skrull buddy was filling in for him and stuff like that.
So are we led to believe that that after Endgame, this is something that he is working on because he now knows that there's this big cosmic threat save the universe. Yeah.
Excuse me. Pardon me. I said end of Captain Marvel. I meant the end of Spider-Man Homecoming. Far From Home. Okay. Far From Home. That stinger at the end of Spider-Man Far From Home. That was our first glimpse of maybe what could be S.W.O.R.D. in the MCU.
So I thought we would jump into the next segment here. With the cast comments, but we also want to just mention a couple trivia things. I didn't know if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive into some trivia.
As I kind of mentioned this before, the interior set of the house is a copy of the set from the Dick Van Dyke Show that premiered in 1961. Vision nearly tripping over the chair while carrying Wanda is an homage to the opening credits on this show where Rob trips over the ottoman. And it's, you know, he's a very physical comedian.
Yeah. Now, also, too, one of the big things, and it's one of the things that stands out, is the commercial in this episode because it kind of just pops up out of nowhere. It's very
The toaster.
The toaster, the Stark toaster. But one of the key things is our first look of color in the series with the red dot being something that stands out. And of course, we know how Wanda kind of feels about Stark Industry things, even though she kind of came around by the end of Age of Ultron. I think there's still a little resentment about Stark Industries there.
Yeah. Vision not knowing what the company actually does is a reference to the many undefined job sitcoms and, again, radio show husbands had for decades. You never knew what they really did. They would just, like, have a briefcase and they would go do the work stuff. But it was most of the shows revolved around what was going home. So I thought that was a great tribute to that. And I also want to mention, too, that this was filmed at the Pinewood Atlanta Studios in front of a live studio audience. Which I thought was weird because I thought it was piped in laughing and stuff, which probably was. But I'm kind of curious that I think that if they're going to pull this off, getting an honest live studio audience reaction would probably really feed into the performances.
Yes, I would agree with you there on that. I just love the fact that they were so trying to be so accurate to that particular style of the sitcom and being true to it. I know at one point the rumor is Dick Van Dyke actually came on set. Yes. And paid the set a visit. So
I didn't catch this one. In episode one, Wanda offers Vision that breakfast and she says, WandaVision breakfast with a line identical to one spoken by Amanda Plummer in So I Married an Axe Murderer. I did not catch that.
Yeah, no, I didn't think of So I Married an Axe Murderer. But there's another one I think that's very important we hit here, Kevin, and that the episode takes place on August 23rd, 2038. The Avengers comic issue 238 from December of 1983 had the Vision be revived after a period of hibernation. Now, this is a big deal because the Vision being revived after this period of hibernation led to a very interesting plot line where the Vision came out of this hibernation not quite right and very ultra powerful. And he actually tried to pull an Ultron and take over the planet.
Okay, I see. So let me ask you this. Normally, when we just cover one episode, the next segment we'd be going into right now is our episode final. The plot analysis is what I want to ask you. And the ties in the MCU and comics. But let me ask you, do you want to do that right now with episode one? Or do you want to cover episode two and then kind of bring them all together?
I think we should cover episode two and bring them all together. Because they were very small ones in episode one. Episode two, business starts picking up a little bit.
Okay, so let's get right into episode two, because as we got these back to back. And the plot description is, in an effort to fit in, Wanda and Vision perform a magic act in their community talent show. And what's interesting, what I loved about this one, Kyle, was that it was spoofing Bewitched. And I loved how it had that animated intro.
Yes.
Because that was all Bewitched. And the opening credits are the animated sequence of Wanda and Vision and their friends. And it serves as an homage to Bewitched, with Maximoff imitating Elizabeth Montgomery's hairstyle from Bewitched and wardrobe. And the same theme song nearly shot for shot parodying Hanna-Barbera's animated title sequence from the series, which I thought was really, really cool. So... but let's get into our reactions to the plot description. Any other observations, Kyle?
Oh, this was very fun. And I got to tell you, I love the opening segment where Wanda keeps waking up and turning on the light. And it's the tree branch. Vision goes to check out. He panics. And then Wanda, like, uses her powers to merge the two beds into one.
Yes. Because that was a very sitcom-y thing, was that you didn't see... At first, early ones in the 50s, you saw the two beds, you know, they had their own beds because, you know, they didn't want, they had to be really safe when it came to no discussions about sex. And so you had both parents having their separate twin beds. But then as television started to evolve in the 60s and stuff like that, you, especially with like the Brady Bunch and stuff like that, you would see them actually having being in bed together. Right before they go to bed, they would have a funny conversation about what happened to the family and the kids during that day. So it's funny how they showed that evolution, and she brought the two beds together and then made them into one.
Yeah. No, so I very, very much like that. But what I find more interesting in this episode, Kevin, is we start getting more clues in this episode. Now, yeah, of course, we've got the crazy plot of the Vision being doing this magic act and everything like that. But there's a couple of key things that really stand out here, Kevin. And the first one is the introduction of another character. And I'm gonna put you on your Marvel education spot here, Kevin. Which character do you think I'm referring to?
Because I did a little bit of YouTube in here, I'm gonna guess it's the character played by Tenoya Paris Geraldine.
Correct. Because
ding 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 ding, did I get it?
You get an Excelsior, sir.
Thank you. And why is this important, Kyle? Because I think I know where you're going.
So this character is actually, and people know this, unless you're just completely blank, minor spoiler alert, turn out for 10 seconds. This character is actually a character by the name of Monica Rambeau.
That name sounds very familiar in Captain Marvel.
She is, in fact, that daughter of Carol Danvers' best friend in that film. Now,
is that the one, the cute little girl that liked her jacket and stuff like that?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, in the comics, Monica Rambeau actually takes the title of Captain Marvel after she gains light-based powers. She later, when Carol Danvers comes back and gets her powers back, she later changes her name to Photon and then has gone with several other names throughout this time frame. But here, this is a major connection to now, not to Captain Marvel now that we have with Vision and Scarlet Witch. And the question is why is this person there?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because when I found that out, I'm like, I love how they're doing this introduction. This is really cool. And I seem to remember in our original responses to Captain Marvel, you had discussed that point, that the Rambeau character and the daughter were definitely going to get a possible mention in the future. So, but regarding the plot here and the observation, so basically what you have here is you get a lot more clues to what's happening on the outside, with the weird things happening, with her seeing that colorized helicopter with the sword insignia. You got her stressing out a little bit because she's going to Dottie, who is the very influential mother of all of the local families here. She's got a lot of power, and they're putting on this talent show to support the children. And then on the opposite side, you got Vision going to this, what was it? A security
neighborhood watch.
A neighborhood watch thing, but turned out it was more of a gossip thing. But I didn't catch this at first, but my fiance Aaron did, who is a huge Buffy fan, Kyle. Who is Dottie?
That would be the great and talented Emma Caulfield, who, of course, is famous for playing Anya, the vengeance demon on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. However, Kevin, you and I should also recognize Emma Caulfield from another show that is a huge guilty pleasure for both of us.
And?
And that would be, she played Brandon Walsh's girlfriend for a season of 90210.
That's right. That's right. I remember that. And she was on Buffy. She was great because she had a relationship with Xander, and I had a big crush on her on that show. I thought she was great, but I didn't recognize her at first because of the way that she was made up and she was playing this very bossy and intimidating.
Oh, and I think
it's like one of those women that's ahead of the PTA and she's mm-hmm. controlling and has a lot of influence. And it was very important that Agnes had mentioned to Wanda, you got to watch your P's and Q's because you got to be on her good side.
Yeah. I think one of the big things, Kevin, is the point you hit on. When you notice how they all said for the children many yes. a time in that.
Yes.
There's it's a key piece.
You say that because the trivia that the guy said on the video that I watched was that they're alluding to her getting pregnant.
Exactly. Which, guess what? At the end of the episode, that little Pandora's box happens to open himself. And we'll talk about more of that when we talk about ties into the comics with this episode.
Yes, 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 definitely. So let's get into the cast a little bit here before we get into the trivia. And I want to jump to Agnes again, played by Catherine Hahn, and jump on that comment that you made, the reference to kids and children. She alluded to her, meaning Wanda, whether or not they were going to have kids or not. She was, you know, talking about how you could be seductive, and there's all these little shout outs to, or the children. And so they're obviously like planting seeds or something that this may go into what the comics eventually went into as well. But I thought this was a really cool episode with more characters coming into the fold. Of course, we did talk about Emma Caulfield as Dottie. Deborah Jo Rupp returns as Mrs. Hart. Catherine Hahn, of course, is Agnes. You know, and then we see a bunch of Vision's co-worker guy friends and stuff like that. But I think what's really important, there's two things that are very important in this, and I don't know if we want to touch on the beekeeper, but also if there's anything else regarding what's her name that plays Rambo?
Tanoa,
because the way that she's brought in is interesting. They're at the meeting with all the women discussing this show they're going to be put on, and she becomes friends with Wanda instantly. But then she also unexpectedly becomes part of this magic show that Wanda and Vision are doing.
Yes. Now, a couple of things here, Kevin. First and foremost, if you notice, she actually has to pause and think of her name when she introduces herself to Wanda.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So that there's a little tip right there. And I find that somebody who already has a connection to a character in the MCU is the one that's being chosen to kind of get in a little bit, maybe on the know with Wanda and Vision.
Right. Right. And also too, real quick, I forgot to mention the commercial in this is the one about the watch.
Yeah. Much more blatant this time.
Yeah. Much the same two people from the other commercial with the toaster, but in this one, they're talking about the watch, and it basically, it's a Strucker watch who is part of Hydra, and it has a Hydra symbol on it.
Yeah. Of course. And in the MCU, Strucker is responsible for giving supposedly responsible for giving Wanda her powers.
One thing, regarding the cast, I loved seeing a lot of, the characters that were involved with the neighborhood watch, the guys and all the women that were, putting on the part of the committee to put on the show at the actual, show itself, and seeing them all kind of mention stuff and say things. And I thought that was a very enjoyable scene. The whole magic, act was great with all these characters.
Yeah. Again, Kevin, I come back to a question. How many of these people are real people that are being put into this reality by whoever's watching Wanda? Because let's also talk about the fact that we have a couple of times Wanda hears somebody trying to break through and reach her.
Yes.
Wanda. And there's been some...
But it's played against the Beach Boy songs, Rhonda.
Yep.
Help me, Rhonda. Help me, Rhonda.
Which could easily
Wanda,
be...
Wanda.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. That was great. Like, what? Did you hear that? And because you also see that Dottie hears something weird, and she starts to act weird as well.
Yeah. So my question to you is, and there's been some debate here at the Fandom Podcast Network over whose voice you heard.
Yes, yes.
But there's been a few names thrown out. I'm withholding because... I think it's too interfered with, and I think it could easily be a troll to kind of throw you off the scent of something.
Right.
So there's
you're not going to mention who you think it is?
Not yet, because I need a little bit more information.
Okay. But you think it's someone that's obviously been established already as an Avenger?
I don't necessarily going to say it's an Avenger, but I think it's somebody who's tied in to the MCU.
All right. Sure.
Cool. Somebody we already know. Let me put it that way. Let me put it this way. If my spidey sense is tingling.
Okay. All right.
So I do have one other quick question for you though, Kevin, just real quick. Of these characters, is there any of them, you know, like the Norm character played by Asif Ali or maybe David Lingol, who put Phil Jones? There's just something about some of these characters just feel like there's more to them than meets the eye within this world.
Yeah, the one that stood out to me was Herb, David Payton, the African-American guy who was kind of heading up the neighborhood watch at the table thing. I really liked him. He was really cool because he was the one that was bouncing stuff off more with Vision. So he stood out to me. I don't know what to make of that yet.
Yeah, but let's get to the big reveal at the end. Obviously, everything goes well in its own way, sitcom-y way. Then they hear that weird sound again. They go out to look, and this beekeeper comes up out of the sewer tunnels, and we're like, what the heck is going on?
The face is obscured.
The face is very obscured, and then Wanda hits the rewind button.
She says, no.
Yeah.
And then she hits the rewind button, yeah. Yeah, I don't have to make it that, man. I don't.
So, just a quick theory on the beekeeper. There is a organization that we have... been introduced to in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Kevin, and you should be very familiar with it because they're mentioned in one of your favorite MCU films, and that is AIM, Advanced Idea Mechanics.
Iron Man 3? Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, and so what do you think the beekeeper thing has to do with this?
In the comics, if you look up online a picture of an AIM character, AIM trooper or whatever... They're in a yellow suit with a beekeeper-type headpiece.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's cool. That's cool. So what you're saying is, thus validating Iron Man 3 even more.
Possibly.
But for those of you that don't know, I love Iron Man 3, and I will defend Iron Man 3 till the day that I die. It is one of my favorites. Okay, so Kyle, we talked about the cast a little bit. Let's tease a little bit of the trivia here. You can go ahead and start for episode 2.
Let's stop for a minute. You forgot one other big thing. You forgot the fact that all of a sudden at the end of the episode, things go Technicolor.
I was going to save that for the discussion.
Okay. Well, then we will.
I'm going to come back to that. I'm going to come back to that. So. But before we get into the plot analysis and the ties to MCU, let's talk a little bit about trivia right now. If you want to jump off first.
No, you go ahead. You drive the ship. Hit me with the trivia. Bring it.
Okay. In the animated title sequence, the helmet of the Grim Reaper, a comic book enemy to the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, can be spotted. How big a character is the Grim Reaper in the comics?
Not a big character in the comics as a whole, but a very big part of the Vision and the Scarlet Witch. Because... The character of the Grim Reaper is the brother of a character by the name of Simon Williams, who was known as Wonder Man in the comics. And when the Vision was actually created, it was based, his personality was created off the brain patterns of a comatose Wonder Man.
Ah, okay. Very, very cool.
So right. the Grim Reaper kind of has it out for his brother and the Vision, because the Vision is basically, in its own way, a bit of a copy of his brother.
That's the reason why you're on this podcast. The title sequence starts with six stars twinkling in a circle, referring to the Infinity Stones that gave Wanda and Vision their powers in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. When Wanda is shopping, there is an advert for Bova milk. In the comics, Bova is this sentient cow who raised Wanda and her brother Pietro in their childhood. Now, Kyle, this was brought up in one of those YouTube videos, and they showed a screenshot of this character. And yes, it is a sentient cow. Why do you have your face covered with your hands right now? Please explain this.
Because that's a whole other podcast that could last an hour, because now we're talking about a character by the name of the High Evolutionary, and that gets really complicated really quickly. So let's just avoid that for right now so we can actually have a timely podcast.
Okay. Another advertisement is for Auntie A's cat litter. This refers to Agatha Harkness and her cat Ebony, who was an ally to Wanda in the comics. The title of Auntie Agatha comes from the comic New Avengers 26, January 2007. At Wanda and Vision's house, there is a statuette of a wizard on the table. In the comics, the wizard is a super fast superhero who was thought to be Wanda's father in the comics for several years and was killed off in the Vision and Scarlet Witch comic. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, but here's a more key point, Kevin. In the Marvel comics, do you know who is actually the Scarlet Witch's father?
Hold on.
Big character.
Yes, they said
big character.
Yeah, they said. Oh, Magneto.
Yes.
Are you proud of me?
You're another Excelsior for Mr. Reitzel.
Which ties into hopefully getting the X-Men into the future MCU with, of course, the development of mutants.
Hey, Kevin, can you help me out with something though? It involves the trivia. The Vision and the Scarlet Witch have one hell of a fast house remodel company, because they went from a ranch to a two-story really quick.
Yes, and you know, the episode is an homage to the fantasy sitcoms of the 1960s, most notably Bewitched, of course, and I Dream of Jeannie. And it's the name of the town is West End. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
And there was some speculation in the trivia that the West is something that a young Wanda learned a lot about of while she may have been watching American television in Sokovia. Now, as we mentioned, the S.W.O.R.D. logo appears, references to Agents of S.W.O.R.D. twice in the episode, once in the colored helicopter toy that Wanda saw, and another on the back of a man's outfit who came out of the sewer. I remember seeing that myself, yes. Let's see here. This is interesting. The Strucker watch is set to 242. The Avengers comic issue 242, December 1983, had the Vision appear with a newly repaired body. Kyle, they're setting up this for a Vision resurrection. I tell you now.
We'll see about that, because this is still part of that storyline where the Vision goes a little bonkers and tries to take over the world.
Okay. Now, let's get into the next segment that you wanted to touch on. This is the plot analysis and the ties to the MCU comics, but I wanted you to come back around to the sewer and the beekeeper.
Okay, well, as I explained with that he has a sword symbol on it, but, you know, there's still the thought of AIM. Maybe AIM is somehow tied in with S.W.O.R.D. in the MCU universe. I find it very ironic that S.W.O.R.D. is getting a lot of play in this series, because a new S.W.O.R.D. comic book just started as well.
Okay. Gotcha.
But what I really want to dive into was the big reveal at the end of this episode, Kevin.
Please do.
A very pregnant Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
Now,
well, not very pregnant, almost.
She's got a nice bump showing. Come on now.
Yeah, she looks like she's about 5 months in, I would think. Wouldn't you say 4 or 5 months in, maybe?
So, Kevin, I want you to stop and think, even in comic logic.
Okay. That sounds like a Pandora's box there, bro.
Because even in comic logic, how could an android get a human being with child?
I think this has something to do with Wanda herself and her powers.
Excelsior to you, my friend, because in the classic West Coast Avengers story that tied in with the Vision being rebuilt, Wanda also found out the truth about her children that she had at the end of the Vision in the Scarlet Witch miniseries. Wanda couldn't have children with the Vision. He's an android. But using her powers, she was able to latch onto two lost souls that she morphed into her children. Now, in the comics, this actually does not go well, as they're actually supposedly part of the broken soul of a Marvel villain by the name of Master Pandemonium, which his soul was broken into five pieces by the demon Mephisto.
Oh, I've heard of that name.
And let's just say Mephisto could very easily have some ties to a certain good doctor we know in the MCU.
Hold on. Doctor. Okay. There's Doctor Strange.
Bing.
Doctor Strange?
Just stop right there.
Did I get a fourth Excelsior?
We're close.
Okay, all right.
I kind of laid that one out for you, but
This is true.
So I am very curious to see how they are going to play this in this series, because I don't know if they're ready to dive down that manhole cover yet, Kevin. I also found it very interesting that the toy that Wanda finds in the bushes, not only does it have a sword logo on it, did you happen to notice the color palette of it?
It looked very Iron Man-y, red and orange.
Red and yellow.
Red and yellow, yeah.
And the Vision has a lot of red and yellow there too, but Iron Man.
And the toaster had a sound like Iron Man turning on and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of pieces going on here. Kevin, I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying the mystery they've built in these first two episodes. But I want to address something to all the listeners out there. Those of you who are hanging on the fence because you're not real sure what the heck is going on, the rumors are out there that episode 3 is the game-changing episode for this series.
That's next week. That's coming up.
That will be the episode that when it went out for review to the media, they got the first 3 episodes. There's a reason for that. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm going there, Kevin. But I'm just, you know, that's what I'm saying here.
Was there anything else that jumped out to you regarding the plot itself and teasing into the future MCU and relation to paying homage to the comics? Because it seems like they're really doing a great job of paying a lot of tribute to the comics here, Kyle. Whether or not a lot of it will come to fruition, whether it's just imagery, symbols, brooches being worn on certain characters that look like certain things.
I think right now it's the little things. And as we get deeper into the series, it'll become the bigger things. So right now I think it's a lot of little things because we're building a mystery. I need Shaggy and Scooby on this. Do you have any Scooby snacks, Kevin?
So I'm glad you mentioned that, Kyle, because one of the biggest complaints I've heard from fans is that we're not getting this in-your-face, action-oriented MCU normal style of storytelling. We're getting this slow burn, this Twilight Zone type of style, Pleasantville trapped in something, blah, 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 slow build here with clues being evenly spread out in each episode, and it's a puzzle that we're going to have to put together that keeps us watching this. There's a lot of people out there that aren't digging this, but then there's a lot that are. But I think if you're one of those that are not digging this, I guarantee you, I have a feeling you're going to go back and watch this after all the reveals have been given to you.
Yeah.
Would you say that's fair?
I think that's very fair. I think by episode 4, you're going to want to be like, oh, okay, I need to jump back into this. Kevin, I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to address something real quick before we get out of here on this. For so long, I have heard so many people say that the MCU has turned into this formulaic movie.
Formulaic?
Formulaic movie. That their movies have a certain formula that they follow now, and they're not afraid. They're kind of afraid to jump out of that formula.
Okay.
If this is an example of jumping out of that formula, I don't know what is. And I'm so
that's a good point.
I am so glad you brought up
fresh, man. Yeah. They're keeping it fresh.
I'm so glad you brought up Pleasantville because my thinking was along those lines too. I love that film.
A Truman Show as well. There's been lines compared to as well. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I'm so glad you brought that up. I think this is great. We waited a year after Endgame because of COVID for Phase 4 to start. And I actually think it was the best thing that could have happened to the MCU because I think a lot of people, after Spider-Man was kind of the palate cleanser of Endgame, I think a lot of people needed that break. I know we were supposed to have Black Widow just a few months afterwards, and then we were going to go into all these movies and shows and everything like that. I think people needed that break, and I think they needed to miss the MCU again. And Kevin, I think...
to get hungry for it again, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think this is the benefit that COVID has brought to the MCU. I think that's why WandaVision can work coming out now, because there was a hunger for the MCU. Of course, when WandaVision is done shortly thereafter, Falcon Winter Soldier is going to start. So if you're looking for more of your in-the-face MCU action, that's where you're going to want to go. After that, we have Loki coming up. And I am so fascinated by what we saw from the Disney meeting when they announced where they showed the first Loki footage with Owen Wilson. I think Loki could be crazy. We're hopefully still going to have Black Widow this March. We're going to have Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu or Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings coming out later this year. We also have Eternals still set to come out.
Yeah.
Phase 4 is going to be very much a experimental time for the MCU as they try to kind of find a new direction after Endgame. And I think we're going to see a lot of different things in Phase 4.
Well, you kind of jumped in our last segment here, which is awesome. And this is our final thoughts on these first two episodes and getting into next week's predictions and maybe even jumping further and stuff like that, Kyle. As you mentioned, there's rumors that the next episode's really going to kind of be the game changer. I personally loved that these two episodes came out back to back. I love the throwback to the television series. And I love the little clues that we're getting with Wanda and weird stuff that's happening and where she is and what's happening with the characters involved in it. Are they real? Are they not? I don't know what to expect, really, although I've seen the trailers that we're going to be jumping into the 70s era of television, which I absolutely love. There looks more like maybe we'll see some shag carpet. She's obviously more pregnant. So, Kyle, what are your final thoughts with these two episodes? And do you have any predictions in the next episode?
Again, in my opinion, huge credit to Marvel for being brave and making this the show to bring everybody back in. I think these two episodes, while not everybody's cup of tea, I'm telling everybody I talk to, give it a little few more episodes because I think you're going to be surprised. I think episode 3, something major is going to happen in episode 3 because I think even Marvel knows we can't let this drag on too long. We've got to have something that's really going to grab in people. And again, everybody in the media who got to review this show in advance got the first 3 episodes.
Interesting. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm enjoying the ride. I don't know how it's going to end up, but I'm definitely enjoying the ride. And I just want to reiterate, I am so enjoying the performances by Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda and Vision, Paul Bettany. I love it. And I love the cast that they've put together here. And just kudos to the production team in this. It's fantastic. Before you end us out, Kyle, are there any final thoughts you wanted to make on it? And I'll give everyone a contact information.
Well, I just wanted to say at the end of this episode, Kevin, you have scored 4 Excelsiors this week.
Woohoo!
Which means you win the Spider-Mobile. Which means you get a Doom Buggy that has the ability to drive up and down walls.
But I've always wanted that ever since I saw Batman 3.
Yeah. The only problem with that is you're Peter Parker and you don't have a driver's license.
Darn it! I could just stand next to it and look cool, say, hey, baby.
Well, the Human Torch did build it for you, so.
Okay. We wanted to let everyone know that you can contact us at the Fandom Podcast Network. First of all, we have a YouTube channel, the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel. Please search it out. Please give us a subscribe because all of our audio podcast will drop on there. And we have also exclusive live YouTube programming as well, including our Fandom show, one of our newest shows that we do monthly, where we have a roundtable talking about the coolest stuff that's happening in pop culture. Our master feed for all of our audio podcasts can be found on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can also follow us on that Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, which includes Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can check out our main Fandom Podcast Network Facebook page. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter at Fandom Podcast Network. My name is Kevin. I am on Twitter and Instagram at @Spartan_Phoenix. Kyle, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter, if I'm not transported back to 50 sitcom television, at AKyleW, or on Instagram, AKyleFandom.
And so this is a surprise episode. We haven't told anyone we were releasing this because we kind of did it at last minute, and it's been fun, dude.
Yes, it's awesome. I love the I love Marvel. I love the MCU. It's my favorite franchise going right now. As much as I love Star Wars and excited by Mandalorian and what that's brought back, this is the MCU. Kevin, you're talking about somebody who has seen all of the bad Marvel movies from the late 80s and early 90s, such as Captain America, and I know you're going to kill me for it, but the Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Love the Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Of course, the Incredible Hulk made for TV movies that followed after the Incredible Hulk TV show.
You know what? I know how passionate you are about the MCU, and it kind of came to fruition when I asked this very important question on social media about a year or two ago. There was actually right after the release of Avengers Endgame, I compared two iconic movie moments that for me made me cry and brought this emotional surge of cinematic wonderfulness. And those were in Return of the King, where the Rohirrim joins the fight. Okay. And the charge that they did, or when finally Captain America is allowed to utter the words, "Avengers assemble." And you said,
"It's no contest." Yeah, it's no contest. No contest. I'm sorry.
You've been waiting all your freaking life for him to say that.
Well, it's that. And I'm sorry, even above the armies arriving in the two towers when Cap has the hammer.
Yes, this is true. All right, Kyle, take us out, man. This has been fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And to all you listeners out there, we will be doing this to cover WandaVision, all the stuff coming on Disney+, all the stuff coming into the theaters, and a look back. And we're probably going to go beyond just the MCU. We're probably going to be looking back at things that have happened in the past with Marvel television and Marvel films. That could get ugly, but it could be fun too. Until then, we will see you next time. As the great Stan Lee would say, true believers.